NRC recommends network security hardening guides, Microsoft steals Chrome tabs, and 23 and zero. These stories and much more in today's episode of MSP Dispatch.
This episode is presented by OIT VoIP. Enhance your clients' communication abilities with our VoIP solution, featuring integrated billing, on-demand training, and live US support. Collaborate seamlessly with Microsoft Teams integration and put your entire phone system in your pocket with MobileX. Improve your offerings and increase profitability with reliable service for 1/10 of the average MSP acquisition cost. To learn more, visit oit.co or dial 844-CALL-OIT.
Good morning and welcome to the February 2nd episode of MSP Dispatch, your source for news, community events, and commentary in the MSP channel. I'm Tony Francisco, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Ray Rossini. How you doing, Ray?
I am good. Tony, this is amazing. What an incredible day. There's so many. Don't do this to me.
This is what happens. So we're always making sure the show is evolving, and we're always making sure that we're just fine-tuning things. We're tweaking things to make it better for you guys. And so we're making some changes that will appear next week, but they were done in my script this week, and so you guys got a little prelude. I don't mind being called Tony Francisco, the best smile in the industry. I'm good with that.
Ray is good, and AI is just going to make it better. Whatever's happening right now, there's going to be as good as this looks, it's all AI. Basically, it's just Ray and I sitting here.
Yeah, this isn't even up.
Yeah,
you know how you know it's AI? Because I haven't muted myself yet. If I haven't muted myself, that's the canary to tell you it's AI. So I
want to know about everybody looking at the B-reel at the end. That is just the mess ups are awesome. Okay.
It's my favorite part. but for now, Tony, speaking of mess ups, you're going to tell us how to make other things better. Maybe security, so we don't have any security scary stories, right?
Oh, so many things to talk about. Let's jump into the first story. Jumping on my first story from darkreading.com. NRC issues recommendations for better network software security. The Network Resilience Coalition, NRC, has issued recommendations to enhance network and software security, aligning with government initiatives. Established in July 2023, the NRC aims to improve cyber resilience by urging IT vendors to adopt secure practices. Recommendations include addressing secure software development and embracing secure by design principles, with Cisco's Matt Fusa highlighting the importance of promptly adopting these practices. Moreover, supported by industry leaders such as AT&T and Cisco, the NRC emphasized modernized cybersecurity standards and the adoption of NIST's Secure Software Development Framework, that's SSDF, and OpenEOX. And despite initial doubts, organizations like ONCD and CISA have acknowledged the need of proactive measures to combat cybersecurity challenges. Ray, we have never, ever, ever talked about cybersecurity issues. We've never talked about NIST. We've never talked about frameworks and the evolution and improvement of security practices. What is your take on this? End sarcasm. Go.
Why do we even talk about security? It's something that's handled already. Everybody uses MFA. Everybody has every all external access block. They're monitoring internal access. I mean, come on, dude. This is such a waste of time. I looked at the last 100 and how many episodes?
179 episodes, 178 episodes before of us urging, please, please, please. We have statewide, we have domestically, US-wide, we have global coalitions of not in the 5 or 10, but in the teens of countries getting together saying we need to do something. I'm always in favor of the evolution process. But what's happening, and I'm seeing this and I'm wondering if you're noticing it, they're starting to say, don't just start to fix the issues such as, MFA and hey, authentication, change your password once in a while, but it's going all the way back to the best practices of the development of the software applications and themselves. And that to me, It's kind of romance. It's poetry to me. It just makes me feel good. What are your thoughts?
Look, CISA puts this stuff out, NRC puts this stuff out. Everybody and the mother, we repeat the same thing over and over again. I wonder if it's not getting caught in the noise. I look at it the same as MSP communities, right? You guys know I'm involved in a ton of communities. You yourself are in several of the communities. But every time somebody talks to me about creating a new one, I ask, well, what are the existing ones not solving? And in this case, I get they're a different set of eyeballs and maybe would be following CISA or JSOC or whatever else. I know it's JCCS. I always confuse what it is. But my thing is they could accomplish the exact same thing by taking existing CISA recommendations and making their audience aware of it. I don't see the benefit of recreating the wheel. That to me screams like too much noise, and especially when they're going to deviate a little bit from, because Cisco already has best practices that exists in their TAC today, right? They've had it for decades. And they amend it and they update it and they do the right things. So I get that they're working with another entity, but at the same time, why not just work with the existing stuff? It's not like CISA is not open to working with each other, working with others. They absolutely are. And they do. They're constantly on Andrew Morgan's every Monday cyber call. They're active. They're doing this stuff. They'll be at Write a Boom as always. Like, I don't get the purpose of a new thing.
Do you think they are searching for relevance because there is so much kind of that ambient noise, and they're saying, hey, listen, we want to create something that could potentially be head and shoulders above? Are we just mistaking activity for productivity? Is this an actual evolutionary process or just another part of the noise?
I mean, and that's kind of the part that kills me, right? It's not... there's already a skit. I mean, SKCD has everything. Go the one with the standards. You know, we have 993 standards. They have to consolidate. Let's create a new standard. There's 994 standards.
That brings me to the final point. Why not just steal someone else's standards and use that? But let's kind of end it here and talk about other people stealing other people's stuff. And Ray, that's you.
Yeah, I wish I had better news. Yep, Tony's exactly right. And taking a page out of the book, our next story, Microsoft steals Chrome tabs from users without notice. This story was submitted by one of our viewers, Dustin Bolander of Beltex, written by Tom Wharton for The Verge. Microsoft's latest update has caused controversy among users. Many have reported that Edge automatically opens with Chrome tabs without their consent. And despite Chrome being the default browser, Edge seamlessly resumes Chrome tabs. In addition, users discovered Edge importing Chrome data without permission, persisting despite disabling the feature. Concerns deepen as multiple users, including privacy researcher Zach Edwards, encounter similar issues, raising questions about data privacy and user consent. Although Microsoft assures local data storage, questions remain about the auto import mechanism and user awareness. Given Microsoft's history of such tactics, skepticism amplifies, urging a swift resolution to maintain user trust in Microsoft Edge. Tony, at first I looked at it and I felt the way I feel when people complain about their photograph being taken. You're in public all the time. Your phone tracks you everywhere. Stop whining. But then Dustin brought up a good point when we were discussing this. He said, yes, but if Edge copies your local data and you have Edge set up to sync, you're now getting your Chrome data syncing to the Microsoft cloud unintentionally. And what's worse is, especially for those of us that have disabled that, because I, for one, did disable it. Once I started using Edge full time, I had no reason to keep importing Chrome because I wasn't using Chrome. I didn't want to muddy the waters. So my initial feeling was this is a lot of nothing. And then after looking at that context, yeah, I get it. What about you? Where do you fall on the subject?
Fall first and foremost. Hey, Dustin, how you doing, buddy? Long time no see. I actually like Dustin. The second thing is, what an interesting perspective, because it is the subtlety, the very thing that we talk about all the time, such as password rotation, MFA, all the things in security. It's the subtlety that allows bad things to occur. this is one of those angles that is just so ambient, no one talks about, and you don't even think about. It's now propagating it into the Microsoft world. When you said, no, I don't want to do that. In addition to that, let's talk about everything else that Microsoft is using to authenticate, which means there's some sync in some way, shape, or form. Is there an OAuth component to this that maybe OAuth is now reaching out and saying, hey, listen, there's some value to authenticating against the site that you have bookmarked here. And well, now they know not only is it there, but maybe there's an OAuth redirect process or a preference process or some caching mechanism that with a pixel recognition, character recognition that actually prompts you for other things that came from Microsoft that you never really wanted to visit again. Some obscure porn site that you just have bookmarked just in case. I'm just kidding. Totally not kidding.
You know what I mean? And Microsoft, as you know, as per Tom Warren, he's absolutely right in the story that Microsoft has a history of this, right? The analytics.
Exactly. I mean,
this goes back forever. Windows 8 was grabbing, you know, user behavior, how they handle keyboards, how they do stuff. And it's every version of Windows, it seems, has an escalating level of how much information they're asking for and is on by default and continues to do so even when you disable it. That to me is a problem because the more data that's out there, the more you have at risk. You're increasing your risk surface. And to me, which is exactly why I disabled that exact function. I can't uninstall Chrome because I have other stuff I need Chrome for the different profiles, but my daily driver is Edge. It's horrible that now I have to consider moving my Chrome stuff to Firefox just so Edge doesn't have the opportunity to import it. Yet.
You're hitting it on the head, and we could talk about this a lot, but people don't understand what is actually being done with the data. And you're saying, well, I have it stored somewhere or I have it bookmarked. That's not just that. It's the entry. It's the keyboard strokes. It's, the military. I don't know if you remember the story that happened probably like 10 years ago, to put this in perspective, where somebody in a general was messaging someone else in the drafts, creating a draft in Gmail. And then she would read it in Gmail and then delete it. It was draft. They could recognize who was typing. Yeah. Based on the speed of the keystrokes. So they knew who was typing. And that was 10 years ago. Now let's process what AI has done, where now you can actually understand what you're typing from the audible portion of the keystrokes being extra. That's now. And those are the things that we're aware of. So data, propagation, that's A, undisclosed, B, unwanted, and frankly, unknown. That is terrifying to me. So Dustin, hats off to bringing this up, and thank you for completely triggering my neuroticism again online. I really appreciate that.
All right, Tony, enough of the scare tactics. Give me a feel-good story. 23andMe, run by Mark Zuckerberg's wife. I apologize for not remembering her name because she is absolutely a boss in her own right. But 23andMe, those are good news, right?
Let's talk about it. Ray, we got some news about 23andMe and their fall from $6 billion US to nearly zero. In Wall Street Journal, that's WSJ.com, 23andMe, once valued at $6 billion, now faces a near total collapse. Its stocks dropped to 74 cents, down 98%, and layoffs in 2023 made things even worse. Despite CEOs Annie's Wichiski's raising $1.4 billion, she's already spent 80% and faces the risk of cash depletion by next year. Revenue remains inconsistent, with the DNA test just being a one-time purchase. Both subscription services and drug development have failed, with only two of more than 50 drugs reaching early human trials. In addition, a data breaching affecting 6.9 million customers made everything worse. Despite Wichiski controlling the company through her super voting stock, uncertainties grow regarding the company's future amid declining interest in genetic testing. Furthermore, Silicon Valley investors see little value beyond casual conversation, highlighting the company's uncertain path forward. Ray, I'm just going to open this up with, I was a 23andMe customer from the very, 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 very beginning. I'm a huge fan of what I saw initially, and then they cast graded it based on the fears of, you know, drug entanglement in the human genetic component and who owns that genetic material. Consequently, the association between drugs and genetics was kind of cut, and I happen to be one of the early customers that still has access to that, and it's priceless in my opinion. And finally, Ancestry.com, which has the model of who you're related to, and then they spun out a genetic component of that, seems to have been wildly successful. So did 23andMe miss something by sticking only to the genetic drug enablement side? Or should they have maybe, did they miss the mark and say, hey, listen, we could just talk about the Ancestry.com model on the back end because they have it anyway. What are your thoughts on this? And I'm just opening it up. I'm really bummed.
Yeah. No. Same. I'm going to put my tinfoil hat on for a minute. And this is completely without any research whatsoever. This is my personal opinion. I want to make that very clear. But there's a French saying for this. Dis-moi qui tu fréquentes, je te dis qui tu es. Tell me who you hang out with. I will tell you what kind of person you are. Now, Mrs. Zuckerberg, being adjacent to Mr. Zuckerberg, who has a crap history of data protection and privacy. So I would say...
Hold on. We just got done with a story that completely triggered my neurotic paranoia. And I opened up this story with, oh, I've submitted all my genetic material over there since the very beginning. And then you open it up with, well... there's nothing good about her association with the people around her and data privacy. Continue, Ray. I'm so sorry.
I want to be very clear. Anne is an astounding woman in her own right. This is not, I'm not putting this on her, but you would be stupid to think that there would not be some back-end deals with Facebook in some way, shape, or form. Or at least the potential for such things. And so if you're risk averse, like the U.S. government happens to be, and then you have somebody who's approached them with condescension, with hubris, with arrogance, with just downright disdain, sometimes warranted, which Zuckerberg has done in front of Congress. I don't see, I can absolutely see why people would be skeptical about that. Whereas there's nothing to prove that Ancestry.com is any better, but we don't have that potential connection with Ancestry.com. There's never been Facebook selling data under Ancestry.com. You get what I'm saying? Like,
No. All I hear you saying is that my genetic material is what's going to make my avatar in the meta world, or what's the metaverse, or was the
So like, that's the thing, right? So I did the Ancestry.com. I never did the 23andMe, not for any reservations. I just, someone gave me the gift and I did the Ancestry.com. And you're right, it's cool. They did the spinoff of the genetics. It's smart business, zero question. But at least in our space, in the MSP space, I still worry about data protection. And there's policies and there's actions. And we've reported on enough stories where the policies didn't line up with the actions. So while I do use it, just like I go out in public and I use a cell phone and I say, hey, Shmamexa, all the time, I do have some reticence when it comes to that. You have your closing thoughts, Tony. What do you think here? Give us something to think on.
I think that this says realistically two major things. First and foremost, it doesn't matter how much money you receive. A bad business model is a bad business model. It's going to fail. And the second part is data is incredibly important. And even though it's incredibly important, if it's in a bad business model, it will go... But then the question is it now more vulnerable to be used in ways that we really don't prefer? And that's the part I'm concerned about. You brought it up. We're here for that reason. We're reporting on it, you know, three times a week. Now I'm starting to think of how do I delete my account? there's a whole bunch of stuff in this thought process, but I am bummed that much money that went out is not going to result in something very positive. So,
Yeah, it sucks. But you know what doesn't suck? The notables. What do you say we get into it?
Let's get some good notables out.
In my first notable mention, Microsoft Teams phishing pushes Darkgate malware via group chats, written by Sergio Gatlan for Bleeping Computer. Phishing attacks now target Microsoft Teams using chat requests to spread Darkgate malware. Using seemingly compromised accounts, attackers send over 1,000 chat invites, tricking victims into downloading a file named Navigating Future Changes, October 2023.pdf.msi. After installation, the malware connects to a domain name, which is going to be listed in the show notes, enabling it to receive instructions to download more payloads or transmit sensitive data to the attacker's server. According to AT&T Cybersecurity, this exploit shows why turning off external access on Microsoft Teams and teaching users about phishing dangers is crucial. And my next notable mention, Apple's iOS 18 may be the biggest software update in iPhone history. Or as Aisha Malik thinks at TechCrunch, Apple's next iOS 18 update for iPhones might be the most significant one yet, according to Bloomberg's Mark Gurman. Expected to be unveiled at Apple's WWDC event in June, Gurman describes it as one of the biggest iOS updates, if not the biggest, in the company's history. Although specific details are scarce, there are hints of improvements to Siri, Messages, and Apple Music, as well as the integration of generative AI into development tools. Additionally, iOS 18 may introduce RCS support, showing Apple's commitment to better messaging. It should be noted that Mark Gurman, while traditionally accurate in his predictions, especially around the world of Apple, he is, by some circles, considered to be an Apple bias towards Apple. So that should be considered as well when reviewing the story.
In my first notable mention from ArsTechnica.com, after 34 years, one of the net's oldest software archives is shutting down. New Mexico State University, that's NMSU, is shutting down its Hobbs OS 2 archive on April 15th, 2024. For over 30 years, this archive has been crucial for IBM OS 2 users. According to NMSU representative, the closure is due to reevaluation of its priorities. The Hobbs archive, hosted by NMSU, will disappear after April 15th, and despite the archive's history dating back to at least 1992, efforts are underway to preserve its content through mirrors and backups. In my second notable mention from bleepingcomputer.com, new Linux glibc flaw lets attackers get root on major distros. A severe GNUC library, that's glibc, flaw lets attackers gain root access to popular Linux distributions, known as CVE-2023-6246. This vulnerability affects systems using syslog and vsyslog functions. It stems from a buffer overflow introduced in glibc 2.37 and backported to version 2.36. This affects Debian, Ubuntu, Fedora, and possibly affecting more systems. Qualys researcher also found that other vulnerabilities in glibc, stressing the importance of robust security practices in core software development. This disclosure adds to a series of Linux root escalation flaws discovered by Qualys, highlighting the ongoing security risks in Linux environments.
We're following up on a story from October when the art world rejoiced at the announcement of a first-of-its-kind technology that allows you to process digital images so that if they are scraped by AI models for training, it will essentially poison that model and make it useless. To learn more about what Nightshade is, check out my previous video from October, but today we're going to focus on specifically how to use it. So first up, just visit the link in the show notes over at nightshade.cs.uchicago.com in order to download the software. Currently, it's only available for Macs using M1, M2, or M3 chips, and it's, of course, on any PC running Windows 10 or 11. If you have an NVIDIA graphics card, PC versions can run the software on a GPU. Once you have the software installed and up and running, you experience a very straightforward UI that allows you to upload a picture or a batch of pictures. From there, you'll choose the intensity to run Nightshade. The lower the intensity, the less noticeable the changes will be to your images, and the higher, the more visible those changes will be. Then you'll choose your render quality from faster to slowest, which gives runtime estimates from 30 minutes up to 3 hours. And yes, that's for one single image. All that's left is to specify your output folder, and then optionally you can tag the image yourself with a term that relates to what's in the image, but you don't have to do this as Nightshade indicates it will auto-detect and suggest a word, and we'll talk more about that here in a minute. Okay, so in my test, I ran on one of my own memes with dimensions of, it was roughly about 2,000 pixels by 2,200 pixels, and the settings on default intensity and faster render quality. The process started out estimating about 45 minutes to process this image. After about 5 minutes, that dropped down dramatically to around 7 to 8 minutes, where it kind of stayed for a long time. It fluctuated a bit until I would say when it was done, I think it had spent about 15 minutes to render my shaded image. And here are the results in a side-by-side comparison. As for this image, the auto-detected term was wool, so I guess it really keyed into this Baja Blastodon's fur. And looking at the two together, I can notice some very faint, like crinkle-like textures that are visible over the darker or the more colorful parts of the image. For me, this doesn't cause such a noticeable change in the image that I would have a problem posting the shaded version. I'd be curious to hear what artists in the audience experience has been and if it made a detrimental effect on the way your art is presented. There are plenty of amazing upcoming events taking place across the community, so let's see what's happening this week. Starting on February 5th through the 9th, an in-person event, Cisco Live in Amsterdam, Netherlands. And also on the 5th through the 9th, another in-person event, IT Nation Evolve in St. Petersburg, Florida. And on the 7th at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time, the 2024 Marketing Plan to Finally Make $1 Million in Your IT Business, presented by Technology Marketing Toolkit. And coming from the MSP Media Network this week, we have, later today at 11 o'clock Eastern Time, MSP Community Live returns for episode 23. And then to wrap up this week at 5 o'clock p.m. today, 38 of 38 has a new episode featuring special guest Alex Boyd. And then with a new episode next week on Wednesday the 7th at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, check out AI Roundup for episode 59.
So how'd you like today's show? If you liked it, hit the thumbs up button. If you didn't, go ahead and hit it 3, 5, 7 times. You know the deal. And if you want to hear more, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on your YouTube or your favorite podcatcher. Did you know we also have a Discord where we post stories all week? You can give us your own stories like Dustin just did and even vote on which ones we'll cover. As my friend Rich Banky says, make sure to tell a friend. Also be sure to follow us on social media at MSP Media TV. Have any questions? Email news@mspmedia.tv for answers on the next episode, or leave us a voicemail, 833-MSP-Network. Tony, if you're going to pick one thing from today that you're going to point out to an MSP and say, this is a story you need to listen to, because we have time codes, we have chapters in our YouTube, so you can actually just jump to the story that's relevant to you. You don't have to listen to us talk. So
I love that.
Listen to a notable and then go to the bloopers and have a rest of your day. What's the story? What's the one shiny piece from today for you?
Well, I thought you were going to say what parts did they jump into, and I was going to say the part where I'm sitting here deleting my 23andMe information online right now. I don't know if that's going to be noted in the story. I really did like the NRC component. I love the reference to NIST. I'm a huge fan of NIST. NIST, that's your framework. Sometimes you need a Sherpa to figure out which framework's best for you. NIST is kind of my personal favorite. But if you want to be simple, then let's talk about the Microsoft just arbitrarily taking your data and then syndicating it through all of Microsoft and through everyone else. That should literally open up your eyes to all of your day-to-day stuff that you're doing for your customers, and you bring that up to them, and then you have an action item, and you can escalate that action item. The path to resolution could possibly, what are the odds, throw you into a NIST framework where you now have a very, very, very nice path forward that's predictable and using best practices. So I'm not saying that the whole thing was amazing, but I think there's a good starting point and ending.
Sounds good. I'll go with that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for watching with us. We appreciate you. Until next time, take care of yourselves and each other.
Be safe, everyone.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.
In my second notable mention from bleepingcomputer.com, new Linux glibc. I'm going to do that one more time.